I don't care. Everybody's living remote work. Let's just, sirens can exist.
Yeah, they add variety to those.
Anyway.
Sounds.
Let's do this.
All right.
Welcome, I guess, to the LexDAO podcast. If this project persists, I'll be your host. Adam, you can call me the Kerp around LexDAO circles. Otherwise, I'm going to assume that you kind of know who we are. Because why the hell else would you be listening to this? I'm here this week or month or however often this ends up coming out with Barada, who's a LexDAO member and very possibly somebody that you've already bumped into if you're in the DAO ecosystem. We met through LexDAO, I believe. But you have since pulled me into four other DAOs where we're working on things together.
Four others? Are we at four now?
Something like that. I don't know. If you count Juris and...
Oh, yeah.
And hack I don't know. Now I'm looking at my disc. I should even have Discord open right now. Too distracting.
Mini DAOs.
I'm closing it. Yes.
Great.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, so, you know, what's your journey through the DAO? How are you? Why? Why are you here?
Oh, why?
How are
why?
You here?
Indeed, the age-old question. Yeah, so essentially, I like the idea of living in a world where anyone, anywhere can communicate, collaborate with people, and come together around things they care about to do that thing. And I think the net impact of that will be good. If we look at humans over time, the thing that makes us awesome, well, awesome, air quotes, the thing that makes us succeed is that we work together to do things we couldn't do individually, right? So DAOs allow us to do that on a scale that was unprecedented. And scale doesn't just mean lots of people in the DAO. It just means like, hey, via the internet, you're there, I'm here, we're in a DAO. We can do stuff. That's pretty cool. So I like DAOs. I think they're great. Do my best to participate in many DAOs that I think are cool. Learn about DAOs, talk to people about DAOs, do lots of DAO things.
I would say you would be found on the community side, largely. You're in the code some though. I mean, you're ahead of me on building out some of the stuff projects we've said, hey, let's do that.
Yeah. I mean, DAOs, quote unquote DAOs, they're complicated because people are complicated, right? So a DAO is just a bunch of people coming together using a socioeconomic interface, which is, you know, mediated by trustless and verifiable code. So around that, like there's all sorts of aspects that come into it, which is the actual design of the DAO. How does it align incentives? What mechanisms do you use? The people involved, how are they engaging with each other? What are they doing? The output of the DAO, what does it actually produce and do? There's the actual code, if you want to get into DAO infrastructure development, right? Like writing the contracts and all those things. So there's like the legal side of what do these entities actually look like if they want to operate in the wild and manage funds in a way that's like, you know, has some sort of liability protection. It really takes a village. Anything from token engineering to legals to software development to community engagement and coordination. It takes all of these things coming together to really create DAOs that succeed. And all of the DAOs that are... actually have like some sort of product market fit, and that DAOs are something people want to be a part of. And if a DAO is something people want to be a part of, people are joining it, people are doing stuff. As they're doing stuff, they're realizing they need all of these things to come together for the DAO to be successful. All of that stuff comes into play, and I think that's really cool. And so I do my best to talk to people and engage with people from all those various disciplines to understand how we can make and support better DAOs.
So in the course of talking to all that people, you spend a lot of time answering the question, what is a DAO, right? I've watched you answer the question a couple of times, and every time I go, yeah, that. what's the top of the funnel? Hey, what's this DAO thing I keep hearing about? Because I feel like that's a place to start a podcast anyway, right?
Cool. Yeah. I mean, I try to keep it simple here. A lot of people have a lot of different kind of views on this. Some are very broad, some are very specific. But if you just look at the words DAO, decentralized, more than one person or stakeholder, right? Autonomous, it sets its own destiny, right? So like if you look at AI algorithms, for the most part, the humans set the reward function and the AI algorithm learns how to optimize for optimizing for that like reward function, right? A DAO, the people part of it decide what the DAO is for and what it's going to do, and they can change its own destiny. So it is like autonomous in that it decides what it wants to optimize for and how it wants to operate. And even some DAOs can change their own code, right? So they're like kind of like living organisms in that sense. Then we look at organization, right? Well, they have some sort of structure. It's not just, you know, did it like zeros and ones in the infinite ether or atoms. It's organized in a specific way. It's not random chaos. So there's some form of organization. If we're looking at the blockchain space, that organization could be multisig, it could be a Moloch DAO, it could be a, like Aragon DAO with 20 tokens, it can be whatever the hell you want. It's organized in some way. It's not nothing. It's something. Right? It's like a, you know, socioeconomic like blob of code that people can use to coordinate. So yeah, decentralized, more than one person, autonomous, chooses its own destiny and or what it's optimizing for, and organized in that there is some sort of framework that optimizes for the human coordination aspect to achieve said goals and autonomy for more than one person. Yeah.
I think it's interesting that when you talk about the notion of autonomy, you end up talking about organic, sort of like, it sounds like emergent systems, basically. Mm-hmm. But you're literally using the same, it's like the same, I mean, I don't know if it's Latin, I don't know the etymology of organism / organic, right? But they start with the same root, the same space of like, humans think of an organization and they go, okay, a company. It's like, yeah, but it's literally made up from the same words as the stuff over here that we call organic. That's like the mushy moss stuff that has a mind of its own.
So if you think about it, quote unquote organic, right? Organic means stuff that happens, that's emergent, if you will, right? If you look at organization, it means stuff that is. But like the process of life organizing, right? Not just being pure, absolute heat death universe, but actual organization that creates structures, that create life, that creates, you know, our world. That is an organic emergent process, and things, atoms organize into life. So if you look at an organization, it is a thing that is a thing that's organized, right? And then it has some emergent properties in it. So I think it's an extension of the natural phenomenon of life that then humans are conceptualizing and fitting to a thing that helps them organize together to create a kind of larger meta system, if you will. I mean, it's a bit abstract, but you know.
And so I think, yeah, so like the interesting part of that is, you know, if you want to say, okay, well, that's just if you rethink life as an organizational scheme, the difference between what we call an organization, humans, and then organisms is essentially the organisms have their own code. It's generally DNA. I can't read it. I can't manipulate it. Really. I mean, in a day-to-day sense, you know, you crossbreed plants and you're manipulating it, but that's very different from like, I'm going to go write some computer code. I think DAO as an organization, like the idea that you can use computer code to introduce the autonomous function is not as AI as it sounds. It's more just like, hey, if we go hands off on a subset of rules because they're in the code and we can't manipulate them, but these couple of ways, it does take on a life of its own. And so there's funny projects I've been involved in where it's just like, well, that just fizzled out and went away. And that's like the best I can do to explain what happened with it. The reason the blockchain and DAO stuff is so interesting and stays on everyone's mind so much is because it lives right at this edge of like, these are the beginnings of how you gamify human behavior, which is way closer to figuring out how to like make a plant grow the way you want it to than it is like making an app where buttons get pressed and then some music plays.
Yeah, well, I think like making a plant grow, like creating constraints around emergent behavior, it's really more around the mechanism design space, right? So you're looking at like, what is the DAO design? What is this going to optimize for? How is this going to incentivize and encourage people to coordinate, right? But once that DAO is designed and deployed, then it can take on a life of its own, but also it is then like the plant that is growing, right? So designing the garden is different than being a plant in the garden. Yeah, I think that kind of circles back to it taking a village, right? Because there's a lot of things that come into figuring out how these organizations look. As you said, we're very biased towards engineering because we have to build out the infrastructure for these damn things to actually exist. But now that that's possible, we're seeing people starting to actually build DAOs and deploy them and be part of them, right? So there's actual DAOs in the wild now versus just the idea of DAOs and some like prototypes. So now those DAOs are out in the wild, they can figure out what they want to do, and they're really going to kind of figure out what DAOs are, what they're good for, how they work. And as such, they'll be able to upgrade themselves, right? Because like you can fork the code, but you can't fork a community. And if a community is in a DAO and they decide they want to jump to a different type of DAO architecture, if the DAO can upgrade itself, they can do that, or they can just jump to a new one, just like a crab jumps from one shell to another, right? I don't know if crabs do that. Actually, fuck it. What is it? Those little
Hermit crabs.
Hermit crabs. Totally. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. I was thinking about the larger crabs, you know, but then the hermit crabs are in the shells. Yeah.
Right.
So, anyways, right. So just like hermit crabs can do that, you know, people can use it, jump to a different DAO architecture, etc. But what really matters is the people, and the code is just a socioeconomic interface that is verified and enforced via cryptography that helps, you know, enhance that. But really, it's all about the people and what they want to do.
Yeah, and I think. Like the fact that you've, you know, terms like socioeconomic infrastructure, right? Usually that doesn't mean code in the sense that we think of from an engineering standpoint. Usually it means politics and people shouting at one another on
oh,
CNN.
Yeah.
And, you know, like a lot of this is not new stuff. It's just what it looks like to have software eat stuff that is increasingly human, I think. Mm-hmm. And you know, and necessarily like a thing that you and I end up saying all the time when we talk about this on other calls is like the superpower DAOs, the conception of DAO software and however it works and sort of cryptographically enforced incentive mechanisms are a superpower for communities and for organizations, which means for companies. But like a step further back from that is the fact that like humans' superpower is collaboration. Mm-hmm. As much as we seem to be fighting all the time right now, we have taken over the planet just by like talking to one another and going, how about we do it this way? Okay, I'm with you. Let's go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that like if you just look at humans in general, right? Like I don't have a time machine, but from what I can tell, the thing that's allowed us to succeed is that we can work together in groups to do things and make plans and stuff, right? And we can do that. So together we've kind of, you know, built tribes and, you know, gone on raids and built villages and castles and nations and rocket ships, you know. That's been great, right? And so it kind of seems like, you know, together when humans coordinate, they can do stuff that they can't do on their own. Great. So yeah, like I said, like DAOs really kind of enable that, but at the end of the day, you can't take the human element out of it because it's not an AI that just optimizes for whatever point system it's working with. It's a bunch of humans coordinating together via this interface. And the interface defines some rules about how they do that, but then it's really up to the humans. And the humans can change the interface too. And this is really, 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 really similar to kind of our current like legal system, more or less. I mean, depending on where you are in the world, but more or less, humans agree to some rules. Those are the laws. There's a way to change the laws. There's a way to enforce the laws. There's a way to interpret the laws. Those are called code, generally. And so that's kind of the rules of our society under which we operate. And sometimes it's more efficient than others. But with the DAO, it's kind of the same thing, but in this little sandbox where you define the rules of the organization via code, via contracts. People agree to it when they join the DAO. They can change those. There's a way to change those contracts generally. And the difference here is that the contracts are verify and enforce themselves because they're on blockchain infrastructure instead of like, you know, paper. Then the blockchain infrastructure verifies that the code is what it is and that it executes according to the rules it sets. And that's really good for some things, but also the subjective layer around that is inevitable because humans are subjective creatures and we have humans coming together around this hard-coded socioeconomic incentive mechanism, there's always going to be this outer layer of like subjective interpretations and coordination and communication that needs to happen as well. And you need both. If you have one without the other, you are likely not going to get super far. But both together really create a superpower, which is, I think, the next evolution of human coordination cooperation via DAOs, and why DAOs are so exciting, because we can take these two things, put them together, create something new that wasn't possible before, and enhance humans' ability to, coordinate, collaborate.
Yeah, and it's so really frequently when I find myself in front of a group explaining, hey, what's the deal with blockchain over here? I preface everything I'm going to say by like the headspace to try to maintain in this conversation. I learned from studying philosophy, not from studying engineering, not from studying finance, like not from playing video games, because it's at that level of like what you just described in the kind of like LexDAO world is the idea of wet code versus what we call wet code versus dry code, I think. And the idea of the dry code is like this, it's computationally verifiable. It does things over here to facilitate the decisions. Wet code is what it takes to run humans, to make the humans do the things. And that's like lawyers and politicians are ultimately the programmers of that wet code. The idea that you could have a world without it, though, gets to this weird philosophical place of like, well, do we still have free will if we drive out all of the, and is it even possible? Because you end up with this like Kantian, I am the perceiver of my universe anyway thing, right? So like, even if I can get in VR, my brain is still my brain and it runs on wet code no matter what. Sorry.
Well, and yeah. So,
like, there's no, somewhere on that line, the idea that software can eat it stops.
That is true.
Maybe. I mean, DNA is code.
No, but look at the DeFi space, right? So like Ethereum's like premised on this idea that you have this like world computer, the contracts enforce themselves, and a lot of cypherpunks were like, yeah, let's remove the all the human middlemen and all the things, and then it'll just run. That's cool, right? Great. And then you have all these protocols, and then there's like, well, wait, these protocols have parameters. We might want to change the parameters. Okay, so that's a governance problem. So then we give these tokens to all these people to help decide how the protocol works that they work on. And then they have to make decisions, which creates a governance thing. And then we have this idea of protocol politicians emerging, where it's like people who understand these protocols, who have opinions on them, can say, here's the thing we should do. People can stake behind them to delegate their votes to then do the thing if they don't have time to watch the protocol all day. You're right back to politics, right? And you're right back to governance. I think it's unavoidable because these systems didn't emerge because we said, yeah, let's do politics. They emerged because humans do that. That's what humans do. When humans need to make a decision or work together, that's what happens.
I mean, it, and that's the thing about no one likes lawyers because lawyers are generally not involved until everyone is emotionally charged. And so there's this sort of like, you know, even if that emotional charge is, I'm excited to set up my business. And then a lawyer's like, yo, slow down. Here are the things you need to do. And it's like, you're not here to make things more fun. But like, we're forced to live at the space where logic doesn't matter because it doesn't matter how good you make a contract. There's a whole subset of your business funded by the fact that people are still going to fight. Like, And so it really comes down to a thing where literally logic doesn't matter because humans are gonna human. And so the idea that we can eat it with code presumes we can build a computer strong enough to understand the feelings and the fact that what a human needs to hear right now is go, you know, it's like, okay, you just need a hug. Like, this is not about the thing you're shouting at me about. You know, lawyers kind of live in that space. And so LexDAO for sure has been an interesting experience of going, okay, how do we code up everything we can possibly code up? But at the same time, we're all lawyers. We know we need a dispute resolution mechanism that isn't decided by computer, or it will eventually blow up to the layer that isn't decided by computers, which is the judicial system. I'm going to sue you in real world court. And you can't go, I don't recognize your court. Because they have government on their side, which is, you know, like Naval Ravikant would call legalized violence, but that's a dark perspective on government. I don't know.
Well, I mean, if you look at, like, I guess it depends on how you interpret it, right? But if you're going to take the view that humans make agreements and they need a way to enforce those agreements, whether it's a handshake or it's a, hey, you know, we're both going to hunt the deer and not the rabbits, right? Or whatever it is, you know, humans make agreements because we can think through things in the future and we can communicate with words about this thing that isn't directly in front of us, that is a idea, and we can decide on that idea to form an agreement to do a thing in the future. And then if that thing doesn't happen, we need a way to verify that. Well, we need a way to verify if the thing happens or doesn't happen. And then we need a way to enforce rewards and consequences depending on that thing. Otherwise, what's the point of having an agreement in the first place? So for the most part, this has been just kind of a reputation type situation where, like, you know, if you fuck up enough, you get banned from the village. And that sucked because the wild was a scary place and you needed lots of humans to cooperate together to, you know, survive. But, like, you know, now it's a bit different. Like, you know, we have computers and, you know, there's nation states and all these things. But the premise still holds is, like, we make agreements about things we talk about or think about, and we need a way to verify and enforce those agreements. And so some of that can happen via a blockchain. A blockchain can verify and enforce cryptographic code, which is great. The thing is, everything isn't on the blockchain, and it probably shouldn't be. So you need this wide toolbox of different things to address different use cases. If all you're doing is trying to use cryptographic code, it's like having a hammer and trying to hammer everything. You know, sometimes you're going to need a saw. Sometimes you're going to want a screwdriver. You need all of the tools in the toolbox in order to create systems that actually work for real people. And blockchain is a very powerful tool that we can use. But DAOs, being socioeconomic systems, aren't just about the blockchain and the cryptography. They're also about the people and how those people communicate and coordinate. And you need both.
And so I've heard the argument made that we should replace the A with augmented instead of autonomous. From a branding standpoint, I kind of agree. Like, the autonomous piece immediately triggers everybody's weird philosophy. Like, what is that? What does that even mean? Whereas what it sounds like what you're describing is, you know, this organization with this toolkit that is ultimately, like, I mean, maybe I just like cyborgs as imagery more than AI as imagery, but like,
I think there's a general confusion here in that most people have never built a neural network and most people have never built a DAO.
Right.
Quote unquote AI is just machine learning research. Once it becomes, you know, viable in production, it becomes machine learning. Machine learning generally is that you have an algorithm that learns how to optimize for a reward function. The humans set the reward function, which is why you can use it in commercial instances, because you can enforce how it operates. It's automatic in that it learns a thing towards a thing, and you don't have to oversee every single little, like, you know, parameter. But it's not autonomous in that a neural network that optimizes for photo recognition is not going to learn how to cook pasta. Like, we're working on more generalized mechanisms, but at the end of the day, what is it optimizing for? Because it has to learn to move towards a thing, and to learn towards a thing means you have to have a reward function. For humans, the reward function is dopamine and cortisol, things that generally improve our likelihood of biological, like, you know, survival. We get a dopamine hit, which makes us want that thing, and things that generally don't, we get a bad feeling, right? Pain, fear, anger, right?
Right.
And obviously those can be gamed and stuff, but at the end of the day, like, humans are optimizing for our internal structure based on our DNA and the fact that we live in a world with scarcity and we have to survive. And any type of system you create that's like, quote unquote, machine learning is learning to optimize for a reward function you give it. And if it doesn't have a reward function, how is it going to learn towards a thing? It's just like, unless you're replicating the brain, it's a whole other thing, which is why AGI is such a big, hard thing to do. DAOs don't have to deal with any of that. All you need is a simple mechanism, the simpler the better, to enable humans to coordinate together around a thing. The humans in their wet code already have that thing they're optimizing for, which is their own desires and personal gain and things that they idealize around this common vision or meme, right? So a DAO with a bunch of people who believe in a meme, who then use a very simple interface, the simpler the better, to enforce a few simple rules around how to do that. That's why Moloch DAO is so fucking awesome, because it just, it has that rage quit feature, which means if you want to be a part of this thing, you have skin in the game, but you can all, you have freedom to exit at any time, and freedom to exit makes more people want to get into it because it lowers risk. It lowers risk for coordination. People coordinate around the thing, then they can make decisions and vote. And that's great. And it's very, very simple because humans are complex. So if the mechanism you're using is complex and the people engaging with it are complex, it's going to go to shit. You got to pick one that's simple and one that's complex. And the humans are already complex, so the mechanisms you use to coordinate have to be simple. So yeah, machine learning, very different than DAOs. Right. Very, very different.
Yeah. But at the same time, I would say my argument for pushing through and continuing to say autonomous is the reason that it's uncomfortable to have it be autonomous is not, it's not because the software might run away from itself and then you're in trouble. It's because it forces us to acknowledge that we're not in control of so much of life anyway. Like the idea of the technology is already autonomous, like as a force, as a study of technique, whatever you want to call it. And you necessarily, when you go, okay, if this system that's humanity, that's that I can't control, is just kind of running, you know, what am I going to do? And everyone goes to memes. And so the more of this that software eats, the more of the world that's currently, I feel like, reserved for lawyers, that software eats, the more and more, like, the memes are all that matter. Mm-hmm. And I've already found myself hanging out in these DAO places where it's like, you know, Raid Guild is a great example of a place where a meme gave rise to a really great project in the creative space, and it, that I consider being creative space, in the build stuff space.
Great stuff.
You know, that just has some gatekeeping memes right at the entryway. And it's sort of like, hey, if you can't take seriously the idea that we can be a web dev shop and also have roles as if we're taking part in a Dungeons and Dragons RPG game, like that would be two games, right? That's like ATM machine, what I just said. The G in RPG is game. Anyway,
I mean, it makes sense to me. I don't know.
You know, playing an RPG, like already, okay, great. I think we're going to work better together as a group because we already weeded out everyone that was like, this is silly. I'm just here to work. And it's like, yeah. Hey, we are too. But it's way more fun to go on raids than to, you know, sign up for a client project.
Totally. Totally.
Here's my manifest for the client project again. Do you have the invoice? The funny thing is my role in Raid Guild is kind of be like the guy that's like, we probably should have an invoice. Y'all.
Yeah. I mean, I know. I think that's like super powerful, right? Because the meme is the reason people want to coordinate in the first place. If you just have a quote unquote DAO, which is just some software you deploy on a blockchain, is it really a DAO? Because like, does anyone really care, right? Why would people care around this thing, right? Like, there's tons of entities that have been deployed across many legal jurisdictions. They just kind of sit there, right? There's lots of DAOs that have been deployed. They're empty. They just sit there, whatever. No one cares. But for it to actually matter, there has to be a meme. There has to be a thing you're organized around that you actually want to do. And for DeFi, it's pretty simple, right? Well, we make money on this protocol. We want to make sure the protocol like makes us more money. Like, cool, great. For more creative type DAOs like Raid Guild that actually creates things, right? It's a little more complicated. But yeah, the idea is that like if you have something cool that you want to be part of, then that's great. And sure, the software can work without a meme. You could just deploy a regular company and then use the DAO as an interface to help manage that. And that's fine too. But like, frankly, I don't care. So we're not going to talk about that on this podcast. But like, you know, like the meme is really important, right? Because that's what helps people come together. And like, if you have a thing that says anyone anywhere can communicate and collaborate to via these DAOs to do stuff, well, then there's a lot of people in the world. So having a strong meme brings people together who want that meme, who care about that meme, who are aligned in that way. And maybe the people are super diverse in literally every other way, from like, you know, where they are in the world, so what they look like, to just like literally everything. But they all care about this common idea, and they can use the internet and their laptops and this DAO stuff to come together and coordinate and collaborate on this idea that they love. And I think that's really powerful and amazing. And the stronger the meme, the more likely people are going to want to collaborate. And also the stronger the link between the people. Because when you have a lot of different people coming together, sometimes the communication part of that is hard. And sometimes it's hard to get them all aligned around a thing. So if that meme is really clear and solid, it's a lot easier for those people to connect and be productive and happy.
Historically speaking, people have been willing to do unreasonable amounts of work on the back of a meme alone.
Yeah.
if nothing else. So like it, oh man, memes. I always want to back up so far. Okay. So how many people in the world today do you think like, if you say meme to them, you know, like what are they thinking of? Right. They're thinking of the media form that is like picture and some words, which is stupid interesting because they work exactly the way that memes do in an academic sense. But I don't think anyone has any idea that they're in this space where like meme and gene have the same root. Like memes are how ideas travel through people in a like sort of a combinatory way, that the way that DNA does. And so like, of course, memes are driving the front edge of whatever's going to happen with technology, because that's what the wet code cares about. Stories, whatever unifies us to do the thing that we're trying to do. Like, and so, I mean, politics is meme driven. And so when you say everything gets political and now you have your crypto politicians, like, yeah, of course you do. Because it just is, we are living at the collision of software and human, the you know, the ongoing effort for humans to collaborate in a better way than we used to. Which I don't even think is driven. It's just like this weird inbuilt thing. But yeah, it's been interesting watching. Like the first time I knew of the term meme was, I think, in a sociology of law class that I took in like 2005 or something like that. And it was dry, completely academic context. Memes as we know them now didn't exist. And now we have memes as we know them now. When we talk about, when you and I are talking about memes, like we're kind of closer to discussing it in the way that the academics do, for sure. Mm-hmm. Picking a core meme, like role-playing game aesthetics, and just going, okay, that's the one.
Well, the thing with the meme is you know it when you see it, right?
Yeah.
We can talk about it all day long, but it's something you feel. Like you're like, yeah, that, right? And I think that's what's really powerful about it, because, yeah, like you're saying, on the wet code layer, the humans, you know, et cetera, like, what do we want? What do we care about? What are we like? Yeah, that's the thing, right? And you find a thing that people really care about, good or bad, it will move people and it will change the world. And so, yeah, I think like we're not describing anything new. We're not even describing anything about DAOs. We're just talking about people and how they are motivated with stories and ideas. And everything else just comes together to support that. But yeah,
I think really I have a perfect segue into talking about crypto comics, because really we should always be shilling.
Okay, great.
The idea that the people leading the wave of this meme, sort of like meme culture, essentially, are the nerds on some level. Like, of course. That makes sense. And you would understand that if you've ever been to Comic-Con, which is unfortunately canceled, but should be this weekend in San Diego. And I've literally, like, I made a video for a project I was working on once where we tried to see if we could quantify how much more polite the crowd was at Comic-Con versus a Padres game, like in the same weekend. And it was literally... And it all started because of my buddy who I was with, who's just a big dude. He's like 6'9". We left the con one day and he went, you know, I get bumped into considerably less at Comic-Con. Like everyone's just sort of aware of this like bubble of, hey, I'm going to play. Oh, excuse me. And they like scoot past one another. And then he was like, whereas at a Padres game, I'm just getting elbowed constantly because I'm so much taller than everybody else. Like, of course, the memes that would draw the people that can go in thousands to San Diego and not bump into one another.
Mm-hmm.
Like, of course they're winning now. They're much better at cooperation.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true in that, like, things that enable people to, yeah, cooperate better will, in the limit, enable them to succeed. And if you actually look at the Axelrod experiments back in the day where he, like, you know, developed it for TAT. Well, I don't know if he really developed it for TAT, but he had this competition where it's like, hey, have an algorithm. It tries to decide how to win in this game. There's two options, be nice or don't. And there's a point system, right? And tit for tat won across the board. It's a very, very simple mechanism, but it dominates because if tit for tat plays against other tit for tat players, if it's altruistic in the first event, so I guess it's altruistic tit for tat technically, they will always cooperate with each other. They will always win. And if they meet other nice players, they will cooperate with them and win too. And if they meet a player that's not so nice, they'll learn and then, you know, not cooperate and avoid those and then work with the nice ones. And eventually that population, you know, wins out and grows and the others don't. So, yeah, it would make sense that the internet, this, like, you know, thing that connects us all, is now allowing the people who are good at cooperating together and be nice to, you know, connect and do a bunch of stuff. It's allowing a lot of other things to happen, but it would make sense that a cultural phenomenon like this is, you know, like, growing, and is what is going to enable people to grow. And I think within that too, there's a really interesting aspect where, like, if you can have that base layer of cooperation, everything else becomes possible. So for example, in the Dungeons and Dragons scenario, there's different roles, right? And there's, like, this class structure, but it's not a class structure that's a hierarchy. It's a class structure that says you have specific skills and interests, so you have the specific role, right? And there's all these different roles that are very diverse, from, like, legal to, like, front-end dev and design to, like, back-end, like, engineering and, like, you know, contract development and all these different things. But they all work together harmoniously because there is that throughput of, like, people generally know how to cooperate, and the diversity of the different roles is celebrated. It's not like one role is better than the other. It's like we need all of these different roles to come together for us to do the thing we want to do.
Everyone knows you need a well-rounded raiding party.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, I mean, and in terms of the strength of the memes, like, the reason to talk about Comic-Con is just, I mean, I think everybody can envision, like, what we're talking about at this point. It's enough into pop culture. But, like, when I was going to cons, it was not the same. And it didn't matter because that was where you could go and, like, literally dress as your class structure, see other people dressed that way, go, hey, what's up, man? And know that they were going to, you know, laugh mm-hmm. at you. And so I think, like, what gets us to crypto comics, which is long intro to the shill ultimately, but I think there's already overlap that things like Raid Guild exhibit. With the world of comic cons and all of the sort of imaginative storytelling that happens that has resulted in those being a pop culture phenomenon. You know, it's like I used to go to cons to talk about the comics that every giant movie in the world is made about now. So they won. They won pop culture. And there's still this subset of people who, you know, I'll describe it this way. Every town I go to, or every time I have moved, I have sometime within the next couple months after that found a local comic book shop to continue to be involved with on some level. Even if it's just buying my books, it depends on the composition of the shop. Some of them are like full on community hubs. People go there to play, you know, card games with one another, board games with one another, just hang out, talk to the people at the counter. But it's all kind of, you know, around this idea of the books and the whatever ethos, like, what, you know, whatever gives us Comic-Con started with these shops. And, you know, they were big in as it grew as a pop culture phenomenon, ultimately on the backs of the stories, right? Spider-Man, Superman, stuff that everybody knows. I've now lived through comics getting big enough that there were chains, like, recognizable in cities, and then I watched it diffused to digital, but the local comic shop has not gone anywhere. I mean, some of them were bought up, but, like, more and more you see them, like, there used to be five shops all under the same brand in Los Angeles, and they are all still there because they serve their neighborhood. They just have gone independent in that, you know, a manager eventually gets the money together to buy them or something like that. And their world is getting weird right now, especially in a town like Los Angeles, because we're locked down for all intents and purposes. I'm allowed to go pick up books, but like I can't hang there anymore. Mm-hmm. And naturally that sort of collided with my interest in DAOs. And I was, you know, it came from like, interesting, is this a thing we could DAO up and sort of treat like a, like, could this be community owned by the people, you know, who care about it? Some of the shops that I have frequented, 100%. It's that kind of community vibe. Some of them, maybe not. Sometimes it's, or, you know, and there's vagaries, like, would it work in Los Angeles where people are transient? Or on the other side, would it unlock the idea that I could be a part owner in a local shop in Wyoming? Because that's cool too. Mm-hmm. I'll maybe never go in there, but send me videos. I don't know. So we're working on that.
Yeah.
You and I.
Yes, we are. And so it's really interesting, right? Because crypto comics, right? The idea is you've got crypto, DAOs stuff, you got comics, right? And so the comics are the meme, right? Which is kind of cool. And the comic book shop is the clear kind of thing you've got to do, the purpose, right? And the DAOs can kind of enable that. What's more interesting is that there's this thing called a cooperative. And some are for-profit, some are non-profit. I think most non-profit, but, you know, whatever. And there, these cooperatives exist. They've existed all over the world for quite a while. They exist a lot in the U.S., state by state. They exist in Australia. They exist all over the place, right? And this cooperative is essentially a member-owned organization that exists by and for the members. And the cooperative has goals, some of which may or may not be monetary. And the cooperative exists to fulfill those goals. And those goals are defined by the members. And there's one member, one vote. And, you know, members get benefits for engaging in the cooperative. It's strikingly similar to this whole idea of DAOs. And if you actually look at the Wikipedia page for cooperative, it says cooperatives are autonomous organizations. That it's like, oh, shit, it's people cooperating together. More than one person, decentralized, autonomous in that the members decide what the purpose of the entity is, organized in that they're organized in a cooperative structure based on the state they live in or the part of the world they live in. It's like, oh, this is really the same fucking thing. So you've got these cooperatives that already exist that are the entire idea of DAOs. They're just written in legalese and deployed on a jurisdiction such as Wyoming or California or, you know, whatever. If you actually just dive into the guts of it's pretty much a DAO, pretty much the same thing. And there are specific restrictions. So a cooperative would be a specific DAO design, whereas quote unquote DAO, there's a lot of different mechanisms you can put together to create, you know, whatever your DAO might look like. But the idea is that it essentially abides by the principles of what DAOs, you know, aspire to be. And it's a specific type of design of an entity structure. And so what we're thinking is, okay, cool. So you got these cooperatives. They generally do the thing we want to do. They provide, you know, legal liability benefits for people in these places where these comic book shops are. Can we DAO it up in that? Can we create a DAO design that matches the cooperative design to have a hybrid entity that is, you know, verified, enforced on the blockchain? So minimizes overhead, easier for people to engage with, theoretically. I mean, we're working on that part. And also, you know, provides the liability protections and can own a business such as a comic book shop or whatever, right? So we're designing the templates for that. And the idea being that you can deploy a cooperative autonomous organization, a cow, on Ethereum and a place starting with Wyoming. So that then you could actually DAO up a comic book shop, which could be really cool. Because then if we have more communities that can coordinate together to support things they care about and, you know, support their members who are part of that thing, that would be great.
And we've been hacking on that as part of DAO Hack Month. You can probably talk a little more about what DAO Hack Month is. But if you want to play with crypto comics, go to cryptocomics.shop and it will forward you into our universe, whatever that looks like, whenever you've encountered this podcast.
Woohoo!
Just set that up while you were talking.
Nice.
Yeah, but DAO Hack Month. Should we talk about that a little?
Sure, yeah.
Might be over by now. I don't know. I gotta assume.
Well, yeah, I guess by the time you listen to this, it'll be over. But hey, the idea is that it's a month-long hackathon for people to hack on DAOs, inspired by the fact that originally, quote-unquote, the infamous DAO got hacked. But now, 4 years later, we are hacking on DAOs. So it's a month of DAO hacking to celebrate all the DAOs and all the people who are part of the DAO space who think DAOs are awesome and are designing, deploying, and participating in these decentralized autonomous organizations. So there's probably like 10 to 20 different projects that are hacking on things. There's workshops, there's presentations. By the time you listen to this, I guess you could listen to the workshops on YouTube or something. We have the Discord server open, so I don't know. We might just kind of just keep it open if people want to keep hacking and hanging out. But yeah, it's like a decentralized hackathon type situation all about DAO hacking.
Word. That's Crypto Comics with an X.shop. And that'll actually dump you right in our Discord channel, at least as of this recording.
Yes, Discord channel in DAO Hack Month. So
right on, man. Well, good talk.
Woo.
Good. What's a DAO podcast? Although I feel like we got off What's a DAO real fast, but I mean, that's the point.
Well, that's because DAO is
explaining what a DAO is to other people. They're tired of hearing it.
The term DAO is super vague, right? So by definition, right, it encompasses so many different things. So you can talk about it at a high level and then dive into all the different things that are about it. And then that kind of gives you a better view of the thing as a whole. But it's like that elephant scenario, right? You have a bunch of blind people trying to figure out what an elephant is. You got to figure out the whole elephant to really understand it. Otherwise, you're just talking about the ear, or just talking about the leg, right? You got to understand the whole thing.
That's my favorite thing to do, but that's why I ended up a philosophy major. It's the whole elephant. Yeah. So, Word, where can people find you if they want to talk to you about this stuff?
So there's the DAO Hack Month server. You can drop in there. I'm at Barada on most of the places, but then Twitter, it was taken. So I think I'm like Cheese Yet or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. You'll be able to find me. Drop into LexDAO too. LexDAO is pretty cool. I'm there. We've got a website. We've got a Discord server. We've got some legal products, services, things that use blockchain technology to, you know, help make low-hanging fruit like escrow contracts a whole hell of a lot easier. Just come hang out at LexDAO. I'm there.
Word. And I'm generally the Kerp on most things, but Twitter's a good place to start if you want to hear me rant about the bar exam and things like that.
Indeed.
A lot more legal techie over there. But right on. Thanks for hanging out.
Cool. Awesome. Thanks for having me.